Chapter 19. Havelock. The corridor stretched 40 meters between the recycling tanks and the secondary machine shop, with hatches inset every 10 meters. Open lifts at either end led to Environmental Control 4 and Hydroponics aft. The age of the Israel showed not only in the design of the walls and the grating of the floor, but also in the green-gray finish of the ceramic. Harsh edges at the doorways marked where safety design had improved in the decades since the ship first flew out past the orbit of Mars. A white scar splashed across one wall where something drastic had happened in some previous era of the ship's history and been patched like painting over graffiti. Havelock fought the urge to press himself into the corner nearest the doorway. It was hard. His species had evolved in the gravity well of Earth, had grown and developed in it. His hindbrain told him that pressure meant safety. The angry whispers of the men in the hall set his heart tripping over faster, and the wall, centimeters from his back, seemed to pull at him like a magnet. It was an error waiting to happen. Lean in, push against the wall, and it would push back, sending him out into the open air of the corridor and the firing lines. The second law of thermodynamics as applied to gunfights.
Clear,
one of the engineers said, and Havelock was torn between pleasure and annoyance. Not clear, he thought. They hadn't seen him, so they thought he wasn't there. He held the gun at his leg, stayed still, waited, didn't hug the wall. The first man who floated by didn't notice him until he'd already been shot. Havelock's paint round bloomed orange against the man's chest. The one behind him had already launched, his body sailing between one handhold and the next, unable to change his trajectory. Havelock hit him twice, once in the leg, then in the belly. In a real fight, there would be blood in the air now. Fine red droplets spinning into orbs and already coalescing and beginning to clot. The third man was still far enough down the corridor that Havelock didn't have a clear line of sight. Half a dozen blue paint rounds hissed past him, splattering the ceramic bulkhead. Suppressing fire. Not a bad plan, but there was no one left to exploit it. Havelock pulled gently at the handhold behind him to keep from drifting out, reloaded his pistol, and counted incoming rounds. The dead engineer floated in the corridor, a sour expression on his face. Havelock counted 15 rounds, then there was a pause and the slick metallic sound of the pistol ejecting the paint round magazine. Havelock pulled a few centimeters forward, looking down the hall. The last man, Williams, hadn't even taken cover while he fumbled to reload his gun. Havelock fired 3 times, hitting him only once. The accuracy on the pistol stank, but it was enough to make his point. The last engineer barked out an obscenity.
All right,
Havelock said into his hand terminal.
That's a wrap, guys. Let's get the cleanup crew out and meet back in the conference room in 30.
It was hard to judge the training sessions. On the one hand, they had been going for 8 days now, and they were not ready for real action. The engineers weren't soldiers. The 3 who'd had some training earlier in life were so out of practice that they were worse than the absolute beginners. At least the novices knew they didn't know anything. And on the other hand, they were getting better faster than Havelock had expected. With another week or 10 days, they'd be at least as competent as a squad of rookies, maybe more. Security trainees were driven by any number of things: the need for a job, an idealistic view of helping people, sometimes just a narcissistic love of violence. The engineers weren't like that. They were more focused, more driven, and there was a palpable sense of the team against the enemy. Murtry's defeat of the terrorist cell downstairs left them at once excited and edgy, and Havelock didn't see anything wrong with the bloodthirst, so long as it was channeled and controlled. For the next half hour, the engineers and the security team, Havelock and two others from his skeleton crew, went through the corridors, holds, and locks, cleaning up the mess from the exercise. The paint polymerized quickly, peeling off the walls and grates without flaking much, or leaving fragments on the float that someone could breathe in. The engineers had also manufactured sets of personal vacuuming systems that filtered everything from tiny particles of the paint casing to volatile molecules out of the air. They laughed and joked and traded friendly insults as they worked, like junior belts cleaning a dojang. Havelock hadn't intended the cleanup as a team-building exercise, but it worked well enough that he was starting to tell himself that he had. The conference room, where they had the orientation before the exercise and the post-mortem afterward, had been designed for the false gravity of thrust. An oblong table was bolted to the floor with crash couches around it that the engineers didn't use. Havelock didn't know how the decision had been made to ignore the table and rotate the consensus for up and down 90 degrees, but every meeting was like that now. The engineers and security floated against the walls or in the open air, the floor to their right, and Havelock took his place by the main doors.
"All right," he said, and the murmur of conversations stopped. "What did we learn?"
"Not to trust motherfucking Gibbs when he tells us the corridor's clear."
Laughter bubbled after, but it wasn't angry or mean. Even the man being mocked was smiling.
"Wrong answer," Havelock said with a grin. "The right answer is don't hurry when you're clearing a space. We have a natural tendency to see an empty space and think it's safe. Doors and corners are always dangerous because you're moving into something without being sure what's there. By the time you see the enemy, you're exposed to them."
"Sir?" Havelock pointed to the woman with the raised hand.
"Yes."
"Sir, is there an algorithm for this? Because if we could get some kind of best practice flowchart that we could study when we're not here, I think it would help us a lot."
"We could classify them by the types of doors or corners,"
someone else said.
"And what plane we could use to approach them. Seemed to me like we'd be better off shifting the axis so that whatever we're coming to reads as down."
Havelock let them talk for a while. It was funny hearing the tactics of small unit assault analyzed in terms of engineering, but those were his crew now. They were learning to solve violence like an equation, not to eliminate it, but to understand it fully.
"What I don't understand,"
Chief Engineer Conan said,
"is why we're looking at the Barbapecola at all."
The eyes of the assembled team turned toward Havelock, looking for an answer, or at least a response. A surprising nervousness crawled up his throat, and he chuckled.
"They're the bad guys," he said. "The Barbapecola is an unarmed freighter with a standing crew of maybe 100 people that requires a shuttle to transfer from the surface,"
the chief engineer said.
"The Rosinante runs with less than a skeleton crew, half of which are already off the ship. It seems to me that we have a lower risk, higher value option here."
A murmur of agreement passed through the room. Havelock shook his head.
"No," he said. "First thing is just what you said. The Barbapecola's unarmed. If things don't go well, the worst we can expect in retaliation is a strongly worded letter. The Rosinante was a state-of-the-art Martian warship before Holden took her to the OPA. God knows what modifications they've made since then. She's got a full rack of torpedoes, PDCs,
and a keel-mounted railgun. If the crew on the Rocinante sees us as a threat, they can end us, and there's really nothing we can do about it.
But if we were the ones with that firepower,
Conan began, we'd be fine as long as we stayed here, Havelock said. But as soon as we go back through the ring gate, there's a whole mess of lawyers, treaties, and other ships with even bigger guns. If we have to commandeer the Barba Piccola, at least we have a legal argument to make.
The engineers groaned and shook their heads. Legal arguments were another phrase for bullshit to them, but Havelock pressed on.
For one thing, the ore they're carrying is RCE property, as long as the UN Charter stands. For another, if they bring any of the colonists up from the surface, we can argue they're aiding and abetting murder.
Argue?
One of the men in the back of the group said. The laughter that followed was bleak.
Being true makes it a strong argument, Havelock said. Go after the Rocinante, and we look like everything they say we are. If we stand tough, we can protect ourselves and still win the long game.
Long game's great if you're around long enough to play it,
the man at the back said, but his tone of voice told Havelock that they'd seen the sense in what he said, for the time being, anyway. Evers Torsen was a geosensor analyst with advanced degrees from universities on Luna and Ganymede. He made more in a month than Havelock would in a year of working security. Also, he was a belter. Growing up in microgravity hadn't affected him as much as Havelock had seen in other people. Torsen's head was maybe a little big for his body, his spine and legs maybe a little long and thin. With enough exercise and steroids, the man could almost have passed for an earther. Not that it mattered. Everyone on the Israel knew what everyone else was. Back when they'd left home, the differences hadn't mattered. Not much.
In addition to the energy spikes, there are 20 heat upwellings that we've seen so far, he said, pointing to the rendered sphere of New Terra on Havelock's desk display. They've all appeared in the last 80 hours, and so far we don't have any idea what they are.
Havelock scratched his head. The cells in the brig were empty, so there was no one to overhear them. No need to be polite.
Were you expecting me to have a hypothesis? Because I was under the impression that we were here in order to find a bunch of stuff we didn't know what it was. That you've seen something you don't understand seems pretty much par for the course.
The belter's lips pressed thin and pale.
This could be important. It could be nothing. My point is that I have to find out. I'm busy with important work. I can't spend all my time dealing with distractions.
All right,
Havelock said.
This is the third day running that someone has sprayed urine in my locker. 3 times, you understand? I'm trying to get my gear not to smell like piss instead of running the numbers.
Havelock sighed and canceled out his display. New Terra and its mysterious hotspots vanished.
Look, I understand why you don't like it. I'd be cheesed off too. But you have to cut them a little slack. People are bored and they're under pressure. It's natural to get a little rowdy. It'll pass.
Torsen folded his arms across his chest, his scowl deepening.
A little rowdy? That's what you see? I am the only belter on my team, and I am the only one getting...
No.
Look, just no, all right? Things are tense already. If you want me to, I'll put a monitor on the locker and let people know they need to cool it. But let's not make this into a belters against the inner planets thing.
I'm not making it into anything.
With all respect, I think you are, Havelock said. And the more you try to make this into a big deal, the more it's going to come back and bite you on the ass.
Torsen's rage was palpable. Havelock shifted slightly, pushing himself higher in the direction that they'd temporarily chosen as up. It was an old trick he'd learned back when he'd worked with Star Helix. Humanity might have gone up out of the gravity wells, but the sense of being taller, of establishing dominance, was buried too deeply in the human animal for a little thing like Null G to erase it. Torsen took a deep, shuddering breath, and for a moment, Havelock wondered if he was going to take a swing at him. He didn't want to lock the analyst in a cell for the night, but if it came to it, he wouldn't mind.
"I'll put a monitor on your locker, and I'll send out a general announcement that people need to put a sock in it. No one'll piss on your stuff again, and you can get back to work. That's what you want, right?"
"When you write your announcement, is it going to say that they should stop pulling pranks, or that they should stop harassing Belters?"
"I think you know the answer to that."
Torsen's shoulders hunched, defeated. Havelock nodded. It struck him, not for the first time, that confrontations were like a dance. Certain moves required certain responses, and most of it happened in the lower parts of the brain that language might not even be aware of. Torsen's hunch was an offer of submission, and his nod accepted it, and Torsen probably didn't even know it had happened. Certainly didn't, in fact, because his rational mind kept on dieseling, even though everything that needed talking about was already decided.
"If you were the only Earther and it was Belters doing this, you'd feel different about it."
"Thank you for letting me know about the problem," Havelock said. "I'll see it's addressed."
Torsen pushed off from the desk and sailed gracefully through the air, vanishing into the corridor. Havelock sighed, opened his desk display again, and paged through the ship reports. The truth was that incidents were on the rise. Most of it was little things, complaints of petty infractions of corporate policies, accusations of hoarding or sexual misconduct. One of the organic chemists had been making euphorics. The ship's psychiatric counselor was issuing increasingly strident warnings about something he called internal stratification, which just sounded like social politics as usual to Havelock. He signed off on all the reports.
"If you were the only Earther..."
The funny thing was that Havelock had been the only Earther in a Belter society, and more than once. When he'd been on a 20-berth hauler from Luna to Ganymede for Stone and Sibbets, he'd been one of two Earthers, outnumbered and always subtly excluded. He'd worked for Star Helix on Ceres Station for the better part of a year, always getting the worst cases, the worst partner, the less-than-subtle reminders that he didn't belong. He'd been dealt more than his fair share of shit by Belters for not having the right-shaped body or knowing the polyglot mess that passed for a kind of outer planet's cant. They hadn't pissed in his locker, mostly because it hadn't occurred to them. Havelock set a monitor specifically on Torsen's locker, then pulled up a fresh security template. He looked at the empty field, asking him by its blankness what he wanted to say.
"We're 8 billion clicks from home, and a bunch of half-feral terrorists want to keep on killing us, so let's stay calm. Or maybe, damn near every Belter I've dealt with treated me like I was dipped in shit because of where I came from. But now that we're in the majority, let's all respect their tender little feelings."
He cracked his knuckles and started typing.
"It has come to the attention of security that an increasing number of pranks have been played among the crew. While we all understand the need to keep things light in these stressful times, some of these have gone beyond the realm of good taste. As acting head of security..."
He paused. Once, on Ceres, Havelock had been assigned to close down an illegal club up near the center of the station where the Coriolis had been vicious and the spin gravity at its least. When he'd gotten to the place, the combination of bright lights, shrieking dub, and his unaccustomed inner ear had left him vomiting in the carved corridors. An image of him had made its way onto the board back in the offices. He'd played along because objecting would have made it worse. He hadn't thought about that case in years.
If you were the only Earther...
Fuck, Havelock said to the empty air. He cleared the screen.
It has come to my attention that some RCE employees and team members have been singled out for harassment because they are from the outer planets. It is critical under these stressful conditions that we not confuse our teammates with our enemies because of accidents of physiology and environments of origin. As such, I am taking the following actions.
I'm gonna regret this, Havelock said to the screen, but by the time he'd finished the announcement, checked it for grammar, and sent it out, he felt almost good.